This is DW News live from Berlin. Fears of a resurgence as the so-called Islamic State battles Kurdish forces in Syria. Dozens die in fighting after the jihadist group targets a prison in the northeast in an attempt to free thousands of its fighters. Also coming up, the US sends new military aid to Ukraine. Washington says the small arms will help boost Kiev's frontline defences as concerns mount of a new Russian invasion. And watch out, Bayern Munich. Borussia Dortmund close in on the Bundesliga leaders after they see off Hoffenheim. I'm Anthony Howard. Welcome to the program. The so-called Islamic State has launched its largest scale attack in Syria since it was defeated there in 2019. A prison holding jihadists in the northeast of Syria was the target. The Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces say they recaptured most of the inmates that escaped, but clashes continue in the area. A second attack by IS took place in Iraq at an army barracks north of Baghdad. 11 soldiers were killed in the jihadist's deadliest operation in the country this year.
The sound of intense gunfire fills the air in the Syrian city of Hasaka as Kurdish-led forces fight with militants from the so-called Islamic State. The battles have been centred around the Guayran prison, where thousands of suspected IS fighters are held. The fighting broke out late on Thursday when IS sleeper cells launched an attack on the prison. 2 days later, the Kurdish-led forces, backed by US coalition aircraft, are struggling to regain control. The violence has sent thousands of civilians fleeing the area around Guayran. They describe how IS entered their neighbourhoods, killing local residents. Everything is dark. What's going on? Shelling, slaughtering and death. Hundreds of kilometres away in Iraq, mourners have been burying the victims of another audacious IS strike. They called me in the morning at 8:30. They told me, your son died as a martyr. I went to the airport and I asked, what is happening? They said, something happened to them. Islamic State killed them. 11 Iraqi soldiers were killed in a 2:30 a.m. raid on their military base, IS managing to breach the army's defences and then escape into the night. The dual attacks show IS still looms large in Iraq and Syria, almost 3 years after the collapse of its caliphate.
All right, let's bring in Daniel Gerlach. He's a Middle East analyst and the editor-in-chief of Zenith magazine. Daniel, thanks for joining us. I want to start with your assessment of these IS attacks in Syria and Iraq. I wonder, do they amount, do you think, to a comeback for the group in this region?
Well, these attacks are doubtlessly spectacular, but they are not without precedent. IS operatives, smaller insurgent groups in a more decentralized fashion, have been operating in Iraq and parts of Syria over the last couple of months. Like, we've seen targeted assassinations, some acts that resemble more like conventional brigandry, like criminal activities, blackmailing. But yes, indeed, I think these groups, these insurgents groups, are benefiting from the generally unstable situation in Syria and the political turmoil in Iraq. And frankly, yeah, this is a reminder that IS has never been dead, and it's very much alive and kicking, though it's not centrally organized and is, of course, far away from the military capabilities it had a couple of years ago.
Alive and kicking, you say, but I think the question still looms. Has the threat of IS been dismissed too easily by the Syrian Democratic Forces and coalition forces in the region?
As far as the coalition forces are concerned, yes, you can say so. You know, there is a general lack of attention on the Syrian file from a European and Western perspective, and what we see is very much the results of that. We are talking about detention centers and prisons of IS inmates and their families in Syria, but I think we have very little understanding what that actually means. These are not just like prisons or camps. These are entire cities, you can say, with like dozens of thousands of inmates, IS people and their families. And what is happening inside these so-called detention centers is like out of the hands of control of the Syrian Democratic Forces and their allies. They are controlling the area around, but if you talk to journalists who occasionally have access to these detention facilities or humanitarian aid workers, they will tell you that IS operatives are controlling, are, if you want to call it that way, administrating these detention centers. So we have an IS infrastructure there. And so no wonder that it's very difficult to control it. And if Western forces, coalition forces and the SDF don't have the resources to deal with that, and then we have other forces in the region like Turkey that are keeping, of course, the SDF rather busy, then you can see what the outcome of that is.
Quickly on resources before we go, Daniel, do IS have the necessary support and the numbers to take this further now and re-establish a larger presence in Syria and Iraq?
Yes, they can keep themselves alive.
Daniel Gerlach, many thanks. Well, the US State Department has refused to confirm media reports that it has ordered US embassy staff in Ukraine to leave the country. It comes as tens of thousands of Russian troops gather at Ukraine's borders. Washington has sent its first shipment of a $200 million military aid package for Kiev to bolster its defences. A US cargo plane landed at the airport in the Ukrainian capital with 90 tons of military equipment, mostly small arms and ammunition. Russia has repeatedly denied that it's planning a new attack against the Ukraine. Well, for more, I'm joined by our Washington correspondent, Carolina Chimoy. Carolina, welcome. Regarding embassy officials potentially leaving the country, how does the White House want us to interpret this story?
Well, Anthony, this has not been confirmed yet by the State Department. There have been indeed some media reports that families of American diplomats posted in Kiev had apparently been ordered to being evacuated starting on Monday. But this has not been confirmed. And President Biden, he has been clear with Russian President Vladimir Putin, especially during the past days. He has been saying that if any Russian military forces move across the Ukraine border, that would mean a renewed invasion, and it will be met with an immediate and severe and united response from the United States and their allies. And that is all the information we're still getting from the White House and the State Department.
It comes at such a delicate moment. Even without confirmation, I wonder, it seemed, listening to the dialogue between the US and Russia, that it had taken a more conciliatory tone on Friday. Does this story, even unconfirmed, put tension in any way back into this whole situation as it develops?
We know from different conflicts along history that this kind of situations, meaning a very tense atmosphere between countries, that there every little detail can be decisive to make a war start. And this is why this kind of reports are so important and dangerous at the same time. If they are not true or confirmed, a misunderstanding in such a tense situation could, of course, be decisive for the further development, especially of this conflict. And I wouldn't say that Russia and the United States and allies have taken a more conciliatory tone, but at least they are in a dialogue. Russia has put their conditions on the table, and the US and NATO will have to respond. Now they will have to find a compromise. Otherwise, then we will be we will not be in a diplomatic dialogue, and we could start seeing a less diplomatic way of communication.
Washington correspondent Carolina Chimoy, thanks so much. Okay, let's take a look now at some of the other stories making headlines around the world this hour. Germany's defense ministry has announced the resignation of the country's top naval official following controversial statements regarding the Ukraine conflict. K. Achim Schoenbach said Russian President Vladimir Putin deserved respect and Ukraine would never regain control of Crimea. Schoenbach later apologized for what he called his rash comments. Security forces have fired tear gas at protesters in Burkina Faso's capital. Several hundred people defied a ban on gatherings to march through Ouagadougou as anger grows at the government's inability to stop jihadist attacks. The violence has killed thousands and displaced 1.5 million people. A Taliban delegation has arrived in Oslo for 3 days of talks with Western diplomats and Afghan civil society members. It's the group's first official talks with the West on European soil since seizing power last August. The discussions on human rights and humanitarian aid are set to begin on Sunday. Thousands of people have taken part in protests, rather, against Sweden's COVID-19 vaccination pass in Stockholm. The government recently expanded the use of the pass as the Omicron variant spreads rapidly there, straining the healthcare system. Sweden set a daily record of more than 41,000 new cases on Friday. Well, aid has started arriving in Tonga after last week's volcanic eruption and tsunami devastated much of the country in the South Pacific. So far, 3 people have been reported to have died, but many more are still missing. Experts are now only able to assess the scale of the damage.
After days of waiting, aid is now flowing onto the Pacific island of Tonga. This New Zealand vessel is carrying a quarter of a million litres of clean water, a top priority, according to the United Nations. It's clear from the limited footage available the destruction left by the tsunami. And despite the welcome arrival of help, Tongans are aware that the road to recovery will be long.
Tonga's recovery from this disaster is going to be long term, and I think we need to ensure that we keep the momentum up. After Tonga's got enough water, we're going to have to rebuild, and it's going to be a long road to recovery.
Only 3 deaths from the massive eruption have been confirmed, but the harrowing stories of survival are beginning to emerge. The scariest part to me was when the waves swept from land into the sea. What came into my mind when I was helpless at sea were 2 things. One, that I still had faith in God. Second was my family. And I wondered if they would think that maybe I had died. With communications with the island still limited,
be completed as dialed, please check the number and dial again.
Families around the world are facing an agonizing wait for news.
Yeah, it's very hard to me to, I don't know what happened for them.
Flights can now land after the runway was cleared of ash, but deliveries must remain contactless to prevent COVID-19 being imported and triggering another crisis the country can ill afford.
Sport now. And Borussia Dortmund returned to winning ways on Saturday afternoon with a 3-2 away victory at Hoffenheim. Having been knocked out of the German Cup during the week, Marco Rose's team were in need of a positive result, and an early goal from a certain Norwegian striker ensured they got off to a good start.
Dortmund were just 6 points adrift of Bundesliga leaders Bayern Munich going into their clash against Hoffenheim. The home side were looking to continue their quest to solidify a coveted Champions League spot this season. Visitors Dortmund were first to get on the score sheet through top scorer Erling Haaland. His 16th goal of the season capped off some quality one-touch team play to open the scoring after just 6 minutes. But the hosts are no strangers to a comeback, and Andre Kramaric scored this equalizer just before halftime. Hoffenheim's record goal scorer notching his 100th goal for the club. After the break, captain Marco Reus scored to put Dortmund back in front with what was just their 2nd shot of the match. Dortmund didn't need another shot on target to further extend their lead. Hoffenheim's David Raum was put under pressure and scored an unfortunate own goal. Hoffenheim pulled one back, but it was too little, too late. Dortmund held on to win 3-2, taking all 3 points, keeping them in the race for the Bundesliga title.
You're watching DW News. Up next, Shift, our digital magazine show. That's coming up after a short break. I'm Anthony Howard in Berlin from me and the team here. Enjoy your evening.